Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Popular actress Annie Potts played, and this is really cherry-picking from her numerous credits, Mary Jo for 7 seasons on the CBS series Designing Women, and Janine Melnitz in Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. She received a Golden Globe nod for her work in Corvette Summer and voiced the memorable Bo Peep in Pixar's Toy Story and Toy Story 2. Potts is currently playing Bertha, or Granny, in the Tony Award-winning Broadway revival of Pippin at the Music Box Theater. Pippin has a book by Roger O. Herson and music and lyrics by Stephen Schwartz. This revival is directed by Diane Paulus and features sizzling choreography in the style of Bob Fosse and breathtaking acrobatics by Les Sept Doigts de la Main. Gypsy Snyder helmed the circus creation, and the choreography is by Chet Walker. Annie Potts joined me in New York City a few weeks ago to talk about the show. Annie Potts, welcome to the Roundtable. It is an honor to have you here.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
We'll start with the matter at hand, your current project, Pippin. Did you know and or like the show before this production was mounted? Did you know it from the original Broadway run or the cast recording or anything?
Yes, of course. I was in college when it first came out, and it was so new and fresh. It was all the buzz, you know, because there'd never been anything quite like that. And, of course, you know, it was out to this young man who was still in college when he wrote it, so, I mean, we all fell on it, you know. So I had remembered it from that time, and I'd seen some productions over the years, and I never felt it had gotten a real fair shake. And then I heard about this production. And then my manager called me up and he said, you know, they're needing a replacement. And I have been really wanting to do a musical for a long time. I used to do a lot of musical comedy when I was young. And then I was in a car accident right after I graduated from college. And I broke both of my legs. I mean, I destroyed them. I broke everything from my waist down but one bone. So it was kind of marked the end of possibility for me. I knew I couldn't, I wouldn't be able to compete as an ingenue. But as the years have passed, you know, I thought I'd love to get back to it if there was something that wasn't too demanding.
Right, too dancy.
Too dancy. So, of course, he said, well, there's some trapeze stuff. And I thought, trapeze? Wow. I don't know about that. And so I auditioned and I got it. And it's just been so meaningful to me because I haven't, I did go back to my college a few years ago and I did a little night music with the kids and did some master classes. But except for that, I haven't done a musical in 40 years. So it is, I am so relishing the moment after, it's biblical, isn't it? 40 years to wait that long and to get such a plum. And it's very satisfying for me to get up there on that trapeze. And because I it's quite doable up there. Who would have guessed, no. You know?
It is astounding what you're doing in the show. Because you just, if you don't mind a bunch of compliments, completely winning anyway. And then to get up in the air and do all of that crazy acrobatics is so wonderful and uplifting. And then the song that you get to perform is, of course, one of my favorites from the show. It's such a fun song.
It's such an anthem for, you know, just taking life by the
collar.
Yeah, and just wrestling every bit of juice out of it. And I am, that is so my approach to life anyway. So to get to sing that and go up there and put on fishnets and with a beautiful young man on the flying trapeze, I just don't think it gets much better than that. I don't think it could.
How does the training work for the trapeze for you? And how, you know, how long did it take? How much time do you have to put in to get to be able to do what you do?
Well, I certainly, you know, one could always use a little more time. I live in L.A., so I began my training. I mean, I had like 3 sessions, just kind of get used to the trapeze kind of thing. Sit on it, go up, look around. But I didn't really start for real until I got here on January 2nd. And I opened on January 21st, so it was short. But we do have this sensational team of trainers who, you know, whose job it is to make you feel safe and secure. And it seemed an impossible thing to do, but they did that for me. And the guy that I'm up there with is just so fantastic. He trained 3 years at the Cirque du Soleil. So he gives utter confidence, the beautiful and astonishing Preston Jameson. And really, I could make some pretty hideous mistakes up there, and he would hold on to me.
That's a good feeling.
I don't want to do that. No. But he's the kind of person who inspires that kind of, like, total assurance.
And was that confidence in him pretty immediate once you started working with him?
Immediate. I mean, these people who train in this way, I had not worked with, circus people too much. Although my middle son, I have three of them, he's been an aerialist for several years, and I spent a lot of time, you know, as a mother observer, and I was always taken with the crowd there because they're, it's special when they're doing that kind of crazy, death-defying kind of stuff, and depending on each other, they're very, it's an unusual collective, and I must say I've never, ever seen the kind of commitment and dedication, because, you know, there's bodies flying all over the place, and really mistakes can't be made, so they never stop working. I mean, they come early, as soon as they come off stage, they drop down and they do 100 push-ups and they get a bar and then they fly back on the stage with such joy. It is a privilege to be a part of that energy, and it's a tonic, you know.
How do you choose your roles?
It's kind, you know, it happens kind of randomly. I mean, this kind of came up. Things come up suddenly. It's like, well, they're going to need somebody in 3 weeks. And it's like, oh, well, and that would be like the day after Christmas and my kids are coming home from college and I have to move to New York. And so it's like, I mean, I could have gone, no, that's too much. I can't do it. But often that's the choices. I mean, you know, we are circus people, whether we've been to the Cirque or not. But I try to choose carefully. I try to choose things that, you know, are fun and have some substance to them and have people in them that I admire and people I want to spend time with. And, you know, sometimes I just I take things because I need to pay tuition for the kids. Let's be frank. You know, sometimes you have to do that. And that, you know, I do that too so I can come and do theater because that's not going to pay anybody's tuition, I'll tell you.
What have been some of your favorite experiences in your career, some of your favorite professional moments?
It's been a long career. That's a lot. It's a lot of ground to cover. You know, I'm one of those people who, like, whatever I'm doing at that moment, it's like whatever meal I'm having, that's the best meal I've ever had. What's in front of me? So I am having a really, really wonderful time. Because I think that I think that it's inspiring. And I mean, people who know my story even a little bit know that I'm working with a disability. And any time a woman in her 60s puts on some fishnets and gets on a trapeze, you know, it makes people feel good. It's like, well, huh. So that was pretty good. And I did 3 years ago, I came in and took over for Hope Davis in God of Carnage, which I dearly loved. That was so much fun. And, you know, of course, Designing Women is so iconic. My dearest, my favoriteest show from television was Any Day Now, about the show about race that I did with my beloved Lorraine Toussaint, who's now in Orange is the New Black. Don't miss the second season. So I've had a lot of juicy things come my way, and lucky girl.
You mentioned God of Carnage, and that was I read in, you know, getting ready to talk to you, that was your Broadway debut, which seems sort of crazy to me that you had never been on Broadway before that.
It seemed kind of crazy to me, too. I would never have, if somebody had told me as a young actor that I would be 57 when I made my Broadway debut, I don't know if I would have slogged on, because I never wanted anything but to be on Broadway. I sort of fell into the TV thing after I was in the car accident. I actually ended up in California because I went back to graduate school because I felt that I needed to understand if I was going to be able to walk well enough to have any kind of career in the theater, and to literally kind of get my legs under me again. So I didn't want to do graduate school. I was, in acting studio with people who'd never been on stage because they really didn't. I mean, you know, that was 40 years ago. I assume that their program's improved now, but they really didn't have a lot to offer me. But there I was in California, and I started doing theater, and then I started getting work, and the work was paying work, and all of a sudden, I had this career that I never imagined that I would have, and and then I had children, and my children are grown now. Although my son is opening it tonight in Anything Goes, and I'm missing it, and that makes me so sad.
No, I'm sorry. Where is he doing it?
He's at his high school. He's in a boarding school in California, but not far from our home, and so we're there all the time. But I'm missing him as Moonface Martin, and I'm feeling like a very bad mommy.
So your middle son is an aerialist, and your youngest is doing Anything Goes in high school. Are they all following in mom's footsteps? Are they all going to be performers?
Well, my oldest son is quite shy. He's a writer. But the other two are total ham bones. the apples don't fall far from the tree. They might roll a little, but they're not going to fall very far. But they're like snowflakes. They're different, but they're each one totally wonderful.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Ghostbusters. Was working on Ghostbusters a hoot? And could you have imagined when filming it that it would have become the like sort of classic-y American romp that it is?
You know, I had an idea when I first read it that it was so original. I mean, you never know what kind of legs that's going to have, but it was so wildly and obviously original. I don't think anybody can, it's like, did George Lucas know when he did Star Wars on, those kids were paid, I think Mark Hamill told me they were paid like, I don't know, $600 a week or something. Of course, they got a piece of it, which made all the difference later. But you can't even imagine that kind of success,
Right.
But it was sure fun, and of course, the boys were in their heyday of Saturday Night Live, so it had a lot of the makings. I mean, honestly, it was 30 years ago. I don't remember all that much. but that it was fun, and the boys were fun, and Sigourney, and, it's a generational thing. I mean, every three-year-old, it's in the zeitgeist.
It has made its way there. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. You are astounding in Pippin, and I don't remember a time I didn't know your name and think you were fantastic. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Annie Potts plays Bertha in the Broadway revival of Pippin, which is currently running at the Music Box Theater on West 45th Street. More information is available at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.